Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Marco Varlese. I work for SUSE. I'm based in Italy. I am a VPP committer upstream, and that's why I'm going to talk to you about VPP today. This is a sort of follow-up presentation from last year. Okay. From my last year presentation at OpenSUSE conference, and it's specific to how to implement a new protocol in VPP. So it's quite technical, and there's just like two slides introduction to VPP. So hopefully you'll follow. I'm going to use SCTP protocol as an example to drive you through my presentation because it is actually the protocol that I implemented in VPP and which got accepted upstream end of January. So I'm fairly familiar with the protocol, the RFC, and how things are implemented. SCTP has been the protocol added after the two other more important ones, TCP and UDP, which are already part of the VPP stack. So just a brief idea of what SCTP is. Well, it's a protocol. It stands for stream control transport protocol, and it's defined by an RFC as the other ones, the 4960. Is a reliable protocol, and it's obviously working on top of a connectionless packet network, which is IP. There are a lot of important features that SCTP brought into the world compared to TCP. This is just like a very, very brief summary, which I consider to be the most important ones. And I don't necessarily want you to read through it or remember this. What I want to emphasize with this slide is that SCTP, like TCP and other protocols, is really a huge protocol. There was obviously a lot of emphasis and efforts put into make it a protocol to be used by the community. The reason why I put in this slide is really connected to what I will conclude with in my for my presentation, which are like the consideration that you should take into account when developing a new protocol for VPP. So, first of all, what is VPP? Okay, VPP is an acronym and it stands for Vector Packet Processing, which obviously means that it's opposed to something else, which is the scalar packet processing, which people are used to for the last 30 years, and which is the one that is used also by the Linux kernel. Why VPP is becoming very, very popular? Well, first of all, it's an extensible framework, and it's based on the concept of plugins, which I'll talk to you in a bit. And the most the important point about VPP is that it's a production quality stack. In fact, VPP was open sourced by Cisco in 2012, roughly 2013, which is really the core of what Cisco has been developing and deploying into their own appliances for many, many years. It is part. VPP is a project in what is the bigger family project, which is called FIDO, written FD.io. And now, starting from January 2018, FIDO is part of even a much bigger open source project, which is the LFN, the Linux Foundation Networking Fund, where all the main networking projects are now sort of managed and managed by under one single entity. So that this picture is somehow tries to summarize the modularity, the flexibility, and extensibility of VPP. So VPP is based on graph and nodes. So basically, imagine, for example, your L4 protocol that's sitting, well, four layers above when the packet comes in onto the network. You can consider these steps that are bringing you from the packet coming onto the wire up to your L4 protocol as a series of arches and nodes. And obviously each node as an incoming arch and outgoing one. Why is flexible? Well, as I said it before, it's based on this plugin infrastructure. So imagine that you want to write a new functionality. This functionality doesn't have to be living into the core piece of VPP. You can write your functionality, your feature as a standalone one, following obviously the coding guidelines on how to plug this into the VPP stack. And this is now an entity on its own, which can be registered with the VPP stack. And then when processing needs to happen, obviously your node now, which is your plugin, will be coming part of the graph. How you do this? Well, when you register a new plugin, for example, you can tell where in the graph your plugin comes into the picture. So after which one it needs to be called and what's coming next. Now, back to the original topic of this presentation is how you go and implement a new protocol in VPP. There is a one important structure that you need to look at. It's called a transport protocol, and this structure basically defines the set of function that you will have to implement in order for the stack to deal with your implementation. Obviously, because we are talking about an L4 protocol here, you obviously can make a one-to-one map with what in Linux you're used to with the sockets, for example. So this structure somehow reminds you of the steps that you need to do in order to, for example, be a server on a machine or be a client on a machine. So for example, you'll find out that there are function pointers to something called bind or close or open. And there are other, there are also other pointers which are specific to the implementation of how VPP deals with an L4 protocol. So for example, when you want to send a packet onto the network, you'll obviously have to know how many bytes you can ship, right? And this is for two main reasons. One is your physical interface may or may not support a specific size or your network, and also because depending on which protocol you're dealing with, there are obviously all the protocol specific requirements that you need to take care of when streaming a number of bytes. And I'm referring to, for example, the famous window size of a protocol. This is true in TCP, in UDP, and similarly in HTTP. So there are function pointers that allow you to basically register your function to deal with how you compute the amount of data that you can send to the network. And which obviously is dictated by the protocol itself, because different protocols have different type of calculations, and then different protocols also specify what they are called the congestion algorithms. So depending on which congestion algorithms you are picking up, there are different maths applied to how much data you can actually send. So this structure here, which I understand it's quite complex to read because there are a lot there are many, many roles, is the one that allows you to hook up a new implementation into VPP. The next thing to do is to obviously identify your output node and your input node. Why you need to do this? Well, because now the stack needs to know how to ship data out of your machine, or how to read data in VPP from the outside world. And there is basically a macro in VPP which is called vlib init function, and to this macro you can pass in simply your main function, where you register your protocol and where you take care of basically registering with the transport layer through, again, a specific API in VPP, which is called Transport Register Protocol. It's quite straightforward. You just need to basically pass in a bunch of defines, which are basically the number protocol identified by the YANA, for example, assignments. This function has to be called obviously twice, because you may want or may not want to register the protocol for IPv4 and IPv6. So depending whether you're supporting both V4 and V6 or just one or the other, you may just call it once or twice. Finally, at this stage here, depending on whether you are exporting in VPP a set of API for the end user, in this case, not the end user on the other side of the machine receiving traffic, but the end user that could be at the console configuring VPP or your protocol. So if you think about this situation where you want to expose a set of API to an administrator, then you may want to register your API at this stage as well. And again, this is going to be just a simple function call, which is how you, for example, could export the API to be called by the VPP CLI or by the language bindings existing in VPP. VPP supports C, C++, Python, Java, and Lua bindings. So, and all this is actually done in a very convenient way for developers, because you only have to use a sort of temporary language or abstract language, and then the lexicer basically takes this and provides API for the different language bindings. So you only have to do this once. As I said, on the other side, now we have taken care of the output node. There is obviously an input node, which deals with packet coming in. By default, in VPP, the session layer, which is basically the layer that is taking care of your transports, is disabled. So this means that VPP doesn't really deal with things happening at L4. And in order to make it to turn it on, there is the enable function pointer, which needs to be implemented and which needs to take care of registering your new protocol with the IP4 layer. And again, this is done in a very easy and straightforward way by calling the IP4 register protocol or IP6 register protocol, passing in, again, simply your protocol number and the index of your input node. So where is the node in the graph to be called? Another important aspect of protocols in general is that basically, and above all with reliable protocols like TCP or SCTP and many others, is that once you send data to the other peer, you expect to receive a NAC from the peer telling you that it has received the data. This is how TCP works, and this is how SCTP works. To do this, obviously, you need to know when the data has been sent in order to keep track of the time that has lapsed And in order to do this, VPP offers a nice mechanism, which are the timers. To this, you can have multiple timers depending on, for example, the stage at which you are in during the initialization phase, for example, of the protocol or shutdown, or if you are in full established mode. So depending on how the protocol deals with timing, you may have one timer or multiple. The nice thing about the timers, obviously, once they expire, your function, your callback function gets invoked, and so now you can deal with how you manage the expiration of a timer. And you may know that that timer, for example, is connected to a specific event on the network. So if I'm in established phase and I'm sending data, and now the other peer is not hacking the data back to me, it means that something has happened. The network might be down the line, there might be hops that are no longer working, but then the protocol implementation needs to react on this. You may need to, for example, resend the data up to X number of times. You will have to do different things based on the congestion algorithm that has been chosen, for example. Any of those scenarios can be implemented by using the timer infrastructure in VPP. Now, from now on, I can give you a little bit of tips about how I implemented the SCTP in VPP. And so it's a sort of lessons learned from my experience. So, first of all, it's really, really nice to have a dispatcher node as your first incoming node. Why doing that is because in one single place you can do multiple things. First of all, you can, as the word says, dispatch. You can obviously dispatch specific type of messages that are coming over the network to the specialized node. And so basically having smaller nodes, smaller functions that are very, very specific and that are more manageable from a source code perspective. But at the same time, in this mode, you actually also implement all the corner case scenarios that can happen on the network and that are not foreseen by the protocol. So, for example, if you are in a closed state in SCTP, you cannot receive by protocol an init ACK. It's just wrong. The RFC says that it's an error. So in this way, by having a dispatch node, you can say, okay, if I am in this situation, then obviously the next node that has to deal with this message for this state machine, it's error. So it becomes really a very easy way. It becomes really a table, a dispatch table rather than a big function with all switch and cases or ifs and elses. It becomes a big dispatch table with pointers to function depending on which message you received and on what is your state machine in. Obviously, the different nodes in your implementation will deal with the state machine as well of the protocol. So moving the state machine from one state to the other, from a closed state to an initialization state, to an established state or shutdown state, etc., etc. So how does the implementation for SCTP looks like, which is not very different anyway from what the TCP implementation looks like? Well, first of all, it's a graph, as I said it earlier. That's because how VPP works. And there are multiple nodes in this graph with arches. And as I said, the first and the first node receiving every single packet is the dispatcher node. From there, you can go to the different nodes, which are really remembering the different states of the protocol. So you could be in listen, or receive, or established, or shut down. What can happen, obviously, is that depending on the packet that you receive, then you can move to either the output node, because you have to send a reply to the other peer, or you could move, obviously, to the error drop node. The error drop node is a nice feature. It's basically cannibalizing the packet. The packet doesn't proceed anywhere else, and depending on which error you pass in to the error drop node, you can have statistics showing you if it was, for example, a malformed frame or whatever, depending on how you implemented it. But it basically helps you with getting rid of packets that are not good at a given stage, or that are malformed, really, because you, during the parsing of a frame, you could realize that it's just wrong. So it's a sort of important node and helper in the graph. Then obviously you have what I already said earlier, is the session layer. The session layer is the layer that sits on top of the transport layer, where obviously a protocol is implemented, and the application layer, where you have an application that tries to send or receive packets. And the scope or the job of the session layer is to basically do two things: to enqueue packets towards PPP when the application is trying to send data, or to enqueue data up to the application when the data is being received. What does this mean is that the nodes that are sitting in the transport layer, so your protocol, will obviously have to do two things with the session layer, or interact with the session layer in two different ways. One is by enqueuing data to the session layer, or by notifying the session layer of state changes. The notification really happens for two different reasons. One, the first reason is that a connection now has been established, so the two peers can talk to each other, and so the session layer needs to know about it, because the application can now send and receive data. And similarly, if the connection has been shut down for any reason, there is a notification going to the session layer, which closes all the connection to the application and frees up the data structures, so that basically the connection now can be considered to be dead. The other node in this picture is the output node. The output node does very little, and this is meant to be very, very quick. And the only thing that basically does is to enqueue the frame down to the next level, which is the IP layer. So where the data is basically being formed in IP frame before it can be sent. So very briefly, the file organization. And this is, again, this comes from the experience that I had, and how things are kind of organized. To make things very clear and easy to follow and to manage from a source code perspective, there are few header files, and the C files usually reminds you of whether it's the input side or the output side of the picture. So whether the implementation contained in the C file has to deal with incoming frames or outgoing frames. The header files usually contain functions that are basically obviously exposed between the different C files, or in the packet header file. This file contains all the information that help you to identify a specific message of your protocol. Obviously, TCP, for example, deals a lot with the bits setting a specific offset in the message to specify different functionality or different features. HTTP instead is not using bits and flags to identify specific specific situation or specific message types. It has its own definition of messages. So in order to do that, it's very convenient to, for example, have structures that are reminding you of how this message is shipped to the network or received from the network. So, yes, lessons learned. So, why I put this in? Well, it's really nice. I actually I was hoping before starting to have somebody telling me how you go and do this. So when I put these slides together, I thought it could be very, very cool if you're interested in developing network protocols or network projects. To already know something about how the community deals with software development. So implementing a new protocol, it doesn't matter whether you do it in VPP or you do it in Linux or you start from scratch, it's not an easy task. It's going to be very complicated, and it means really reading a lot of RFC text. Sometimes it can be easy, sometimes you have to read between the line what things are meant to be, and a lot of things that are left to interpretation then are done differently depending on which stack you look at. So for those, for example, for those cases, you really need to think about, will I follow the others or I will do something completely different? It's a lot of, interesting innovation as well. So how would you go then to implement a new protocol and approach the FIDO community? Well, first of all, something that I found it to be really, really cool, and important for the development, was to use draft patches. So the FIDO VPP community uses Gerrit as an interface for basically looking at patches, reviewing patches, etc. Why the draft patch? Well, I started the rationale behind the draft patch was different from what it ended up to. I used the draft patch initially to save my work because I was developing on my machine at home, and the last thing that you want is that the machine breaks or the hard drive dies, and then you have lost a couple of months worth of work. So I start using the draft patch as a mechanism to save my source code to Gerrit. All of a sudden, though, I thought that it was a very convenient way to start getting feedback, private feedback to my work by core reviewers, core people in VPP. And in fact, I started getting feedback and suggestions on how to make things better or how to deal with certain problems. So definitely, like one of the suggestions I would give is to go and use draft patches as much as you can. And obviously, when you believe that your work is ready, which means at least you have some unit tests for your stack and it's building fine and the integration looks good to you, then you can go public. Why waiting for this? Well, unless you have at least tested once your stack and it's brand new code, it's really, really hard to ask somebody else who's very, very busy with other things to review 10,000 lines of code from scratch. HTTP implementation is roughly 12,000 lines of code today. So when I pushed it to Gerrit, I was also a little bit afraid that people said, look, it's going to take us 6 months to review this. But there is also like a trust between people that are the committers and people that are authors. And how do you build this trust is obviously showing that your code works. It's not just like dead code. To prove that it works, you need to have tests. And the test that I used, for example, was an existing Echo client server application that was using previously TCP. And when I came in with HTTP, well, I just switched the protocol to HTTP and the application was still working. So that now was a standalone application using a brand new protocol in VPP. Another comment I have is about missing features. Today is end of May almost, and the first implementation of SCDP got in January, and there were like obviously more patches and more things went in during these months, and there are still missing features for the protocol. What I'm trying to say is that you don't have to go and implement the full RFC down to the commas in order to have your code upstreamed and accepted, because it's understood that it's a lot of work and it's a lot of testing. And in order to have something upstreamed, you should have the core functionality, what you think that you really believe it's the core functionality of a protocol to be working. And then you can consider the corner cases after that. And that's also the reason why they are corner cases. They are kind of small cases that can happen due to many different reasons over the network. But if you go and implement first the corner cases and then the main functionality, it will take you, rather than 6 months, it will take you likely 18 months. Because you're not in a position to then test the full stack unless you're done. So this is another recommendation I would have. So there's a lot of ongoing work. So if you are interested, please ping me. As I said, I'm a committer on the project. I'm author of SCDP and of the Genevi implementation in VPP, Genevi tunnel implementation. So there is, for example, the message bundling feature of SCDP is yet to be implemented. The message bundling means that together with pure control messages, you can bundle data to those frames so that you can save up send and receive bytes over the network. So that has to be done. There's a lot of hardening and testing that is still ongoing and that needs attention and more eyes. Implementation of new congestion algorithms is still also welcome. So all in all, there's a lot of room for work and for new features to be implemented. So if you're interested, again, ping me. Now, question. Yes, I'll just wait so maybe it's recorded in the audio.
The question was, could you say a few words more about how you personally and OpenSUSE and possibly SUSE or someone else is using this VPP software?
Yeah, so speaking about SUSE, we have the VPP source code packagized and available for Leap 15 and on Tumbleweed. The main goal or the main deployment that people are targeting for VPP is the vSwitching area. So the vSwitching, virtual switching, so it's somehow opposed to OpenVSwitch as a sort of product that does similar functionality, which is virtual switching. people tend to put them on the same page or trying to do comparison between the two. It's really, really hard. It's not fair for the one or the other, but this is the main idea. Where, for example, you can use VPP similar to what you use OVS, Open vSwitch, for example, packet switching between VMs or containers, or doing tunnels between endpoints, and all the kind of NFV area. Yes. You can as well. Like there is a functionality in VPP which is the ACL functionality. What you can do is basically implement a firewall with it. So if you're familiar with IP tables, for example, it has the same functionality that IP tables allow you, so dropping or forwarding, accepting traffic using the tuple configuration. And again, it has routing support, it has full FIB support for V4 and V6. I didn't switch it off.
Now it is. The background of the question was that we're here in Prague today, and there is at least one person from CZ.NIC here, from the network organization. They're developing, I think, the third generation of routers, so you may want to get in touch with them.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
When interacting with FIDO in the upstream, what are the pain point areas as, you know, a contributor and committer? What are the parts of FIDO itself, you know, the project, that are painful?
I was asked a similar question in Copenhagen. To be honest with you, it's really hard for me to find a negative in the community itself. I always found it, even when I started the early days, to be a very open and friendly community. Sure, if you go and look at the mailing list and the patches, etc., the big core, it's Cisco based, and it makes total sense, right? They were the guys developing it for many years and upstreaming it, and they're still developing it. But there are lots of new people coming in with the new ideas, with the new pair of eyes. So the pain points, something that has been mentioned by others as well, it's likely the lack, but it's not really the documentation is not great around the project. Okay, so you find you find some initial hooks that you can use, but then it's really getting your hands dirty and look into the code and do things with the code. It obviously also depends whether you're interested in the development of the code versus the deployment and integration with other components. So, for example, VPP in itself, it's, as I said, it's one project, and there are other projects that are dealing with how you go and integrate VPP, for example, with OpenStack, how you go and use VPP with containers, or scenarios that you can have specifically to one versus the other domain. It's really, really, like the FIDO community, I think it's very, very big. VPP is just one, and I only look after, well, I only work on VPP. I would say I wouldn't be afraid, to be honest with you, of approaching the community. There are lots of good people that are always replying to your email, as I said, from early days. So.
Could you just quickly spell out what FIDO actually stands for?
Fast Data I/O. So and it's nice because then they actually, because it sounds like FIDO, they make the picture like the dog. But fast data input output, yeah. Okay. Thank you.